The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Empty shelves.
This is really scary.
And worried parents.
A couple stores we've been in, we have not had it, and we've had to go to the next location.
They are looking for baby formula and not finding it, at least not easily.
I'm down to one can of formula.
At the end of April, nearly 40% of popular baby formulas were sold out across the U.S. That's up from 31% 2 weeks before. The shortage is getting worse.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It seems to be coming in every direction, doesn't it? Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It is good to be with you today. And I'm going to kick it off today, taking a look at just where we are in the economy. The president, of course, addressed the nation. And coming up in the next, across this next hour, I think it would do us all good to understand where the economy is going. You probably saw the stock market in free fall the past couple of days and weeks, really. The president addressed inflation today. But I know a lot of you are feeling it both at the pump, but especially in the grocery store. You know, I happen to have young adult children right now, and as a father, I think, oh my gosh, how are they making it? You know, how are you buying your groceries? How are you filling up your car? You might be experiencing the same pinch. There are reports, and again, I'm not here to frighten anybody. I just want to throw some information on the table. I want you to be aware of it, because I do think that we could, if we're informed, make good decisions. We can also know where our vote goes and what policy should be, and we should also do the one thing that will really hold back God's hand of justice and bring upon his hand of mercy. That's pray and fast and do penance and invoke the mercy of God. Those are things we need to do. We need to look at these things temporally, but we also have to engage them spiritually. I don't think that's heard enough. And I'm here to just remind myself of that and maybe you. You know, when farmers in the United States returned to their fields last month, it officially kicked off the 2022 growing season. But there's been some major changes in their crop plantings. You know, I was watching the war over in Ukraine unfold. A lot of people were talking about how that's going to cause fertilizer to soar. And we're seeing that. Fertilizer costs are up. Chemical shortages are at play right now. We are seeing protracted drought conditions, right? Farmers are planting different and smaller quantities of certain crops. And some experts believe that the forecast for 2022 for the growing season, it may outstrip existing production resources. We have record low corn production that's expected for 2022 in at least three states, and that's Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. Wheat planting is at its fifth lowest level since 1919, back when the world was coming out of another pandemic, right? Wheat planting is at its fifth lowest level. And despite all of these challenges, you know, I think our farmers here are continuing to soldier on, trying to make do with what they have. But some experts are saying, you know what, we're going to see the perfect storm for food shortages. So coming up in a second, Jim Ennis is going to be stopping by. What do we do? Do you stock up? What are our nation's farmers going to do? What will it look like? Is it temporary? Is this long term? We'll get you plugged in. If you want to join me, love to hear from you. If you're a farmer, I'd love to hear from you. And the number here to get in anytime is 888-914-9149. Yeah, I was looking at the dropping levels in Lake Mead, and a little bit later in the week, I'm gonna cover that for you. And I think you'll find the story fascinating. They're finding bodies at the bottom of Lake Mead. Very creepy. Probably a lot of murders. They found two recent bodies that were down there. That Lake Mead is down 30%. It's down to 30% of its capacity. It's lost 70% of its water. And, you know, we talked about water wars before out in the West, you know, the Colorado River and a whole lot of other things. I'm going to address that a little bit later. I'll bring up the speed on some of that. But this drought that we're seeing just makes me think of what we're seeing in the culture, right? And I don't want to get too prophetic here. But in Matthew, right, I think it's Matthew 25, 24, somewhere around there, where it talks about there would be wars and rumors of wars. The earth will shake, right? It talks about these natural events and calamities we'll be seeing. We're experiencing drought, right? What did Our Lady of Fatima say? She says, the war is a result of sin. We really need to amend ourselves as a nation. I mean, we are heading down the highway at breakneck speed, and And we're going down the wrong lane, unfortunately. So we'll see what happens. As I said, I don't want to get too off tangent here, but with the war with, you know, Russia, with Vladimir Putin launching a military invasion of his neighbor, Ukraine is one of those nations that produce a ton of fertilizer, and they are the breadbasket of Europe. There's going to be a food shortage over there. The price hike resulting from Moscow's conflict in Ukraine, and I want to be careful about how I say that because I can't stand when I hear President Biden say, it's Putin's price hike. It has nothing to do with that. It has something to do with that, but there's a lot of other factors that factor into why our gas is so high and a lot of other things. But the fact that Russia went into Ukraine is certainly impacting the world's largest exporter of fertilizer. They account for, I think, you know, ammonia exports and urea and phosphate and potash and all those things farmers need to plant their fields. And one final thought here, and then I'll change gears on this particular issue. We'll talk to Jim. Recent supply chain disruptions, right? I don't know. Are you waiting for things? A true story. I ordered some furniture for the back deck, right? I had recently relocated and I needed some, you know, patio furniture and four of the chairs came, but the couch didn't, right? And I checked into it. They said, we don't know when it's going to come. You know, it's global supply chain issue. It's this, it's that. They might even cancel it. You know, who knows? I say, why would I never have bought this set if I knew that I wasn't going to get the couch, right? It's like, it's crazy. But we're seeing supply chain issues right now all over the place. And it's affecting the country in a big time way. One other aspect of this, too, just as a strange thing, I saw a story where they have killed 37 million chicken and turkeys. 37 million of those. And, that shouldn't shock you. Without fertilizer, the yield of the crops that we plant are smaller. Bird flu is now hitting our country. And if they have one or two infections, they got to wipe out, they have to euthanize all the flock. So here in the country, again, another one of these perfect storm elements, we as a nation are experiencing what's being called the worst outbreak of avian influenza in years. Strange? Yeah. Coincidence? God incident? Take a listen to CBS and what they're reporting.
Chinese residents aren't the only ones in lockdown.
Yeah, farmers across the U.S. and Europe are keeping their organic and free-range chickens inside amidst the worst outbreak of avian influenza in years. More than 35 million birds have been wiped out this year alone in one of the worst bird flu outbreaks in U.S. history. In France, government officials are temporarily requiring farmers to keep their chickens indoors as roughly 16 million birds have been culled due to the outbreak. Infections have also been reported in other European nations, including Britain, Italy, and Spain.
Yeah, so look, it continues. I'll leave it at that. I mean, we could talk an hour about what's currently under, unfolding right now. Meat has gone through the roof, as you know, right? It is really, really high right now. And now we're looking at the loss of 37 million chicken and turkeys. I mean, that's a lot. Will the cost go up? The cost of fuel is going up. It's going to get passed on to you, the consumer. So those trucks that deliver to the grocery stores, that's going up. If you've gone to the grocery store, there was a USA Today or a USA.com survey that I saw. It was Food Navigator, USA.com. I think it's the website. It doesn't matter. Bottom line is there was a survey I saw, right? 51% of grocery shoppers said they couldn't find what they wanted because of a shortage. I don't know about you. Have you run into that, the product you want to buy or which is not there on the shelves? That's up from 43% in September of last year when we were in this pandemic. Of course, inflation's hitting everybody's pocketbook and driving a lot of food purchase decisions. I'm joined today by Jim Ennis. He's the executive director of Catholic Rural Life, and you can find him at catholicrurallife.org. I've invited him to stop by today just to give us a sense of what we're seeing, where we're heading, and how he sees it playing out. Jim, welcome back. Good to talk with you today.
Good to talk with you too, Drew. Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm delighted. Yeah, we live in a land of abundance. We are a blessed nation from sea to shining sea. That's for sure. It's a land of plenty. But correct me if I'm wrong. Last year's harvest, I thought, I remember reading, it was pretty good overall. What's going on? What are we seeing right now? Why are we experiencing a shortage of last year? And maybe my numbers were wrong, but last year I thought we did pretty good.
We did. And you're right. It has been the perfect storm. I mean, from the war in Ukraine, Russia and Ukraine being significant wheat exporters. I mean, they represent about a quarter of the world's exports in wheat. And so wheat, obviously, for bread and other things is used. So you're seeing the whole food system being impacted by a number of factors. One is the war in Ukraine and impacting Russia and Belarus, but also this avian flu. So that has caused eggs. The price of eggs is going up. It's impacted poultry and turkey across the country, and you'll see turkey shortages. I mean, my daughter was shopping for a turkey for Easter and couldn't find one, so we ended up having, a ham instead. And it was just interesting to see how quickly it impacts the whole food system. Also, wow. You've mentioned drought. And so that's impacting farmers' access to water in some, in California and Arizona and New Mexico, and the whole West is being impacted by that lack of water and the lack of snow. Usually, their farmers are trusting the snowpack in the mountains, and the snowfall in January, February, March was the lowest they'd had in many years, and so that impacts the amount of water that's going to be available for the summer dry months. So these are a whole bunch of factors. Then you mentioned fertilizers, and those are inputs for farmers, and the price of fertilizer has gone through the roof because Russia and Ukraine and Belarus are large exporters of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, which farmers use for fertilizer. So the costs are going up, and that those costs of production will be passed on to the consumer. So not only are there going to be shortages, but there are going to be price increases.
So let's talk about that for a moment, because I think that it's such a big story. I know there's been some reporting on it, but I think maybe there's a lot of people who don't know about it. The fertilizer, everybody thinks, oh, we need to grow our wheat or corn or soy, whatever it is that the farmers are going to put in, but you need the fertilizer. I saw a report, it was a couple months ago, one farmer saying, I just can't get the potash I need, or I just can't get the fertilizer that I need for this particular crop, therefore I'm not going to grow it. So that affects us here in the States. That would be an edible crop for us, so he's going to grow something else. I don't know what he was going to grow, soy or whatever it be, for some other purpose, or he's going to plant some other crop in general. Are we seeing farmers around the country saying, because I can't get the fertilizer I need, or because the climate is so bad and water restrictions are so great right now, I'm switching my crop because I have got to eat too, they're saying. I still got to pay the bank and I still got to feed myself. So what are you seeing in terms of the farming world?
Well, farmers respond to the market and they respond to the availability of, fertilizers, as you said. And so you'll see in different parts of the country that farmers are going to maybe take fields out of production due to the lack of water, the availability of water. I mean, I was driving down the interstate, Highway 99 in Central California, and you literally see farmers changing out their crops and, taking out nut trees and planting other crops in there to take the place of those orchards because of the lack of water, the amount of water that those orchards require. So definitely both in terms of the drought and water conditions or fertilizer, the availability of fertilizer, that will impact and inform what farmers are going to plant.
You're the expert. Are there other ways that farmers can fertilize their crops other than using so many of the chemicals that we currently depend upon? Are there other things that they can do that might just be as cost-effective, or maybe not as cost-effective, but as productive?
The answer to your question is that, I know many farmers who are changing their strategies, and again, they spread manure all over their fields so they can raise livestock and utilize that manure for fertilizer. Here in the Midwest, when you grow so much corn and soybeans, they're reliant on those other types of fertilizers to fertilize their fields. There are many farmers that are making these changes to reduce the dependence upon inputs like that, mm-hmm. and to actually supply their own fields. And so there are strategies and ways to mitigate your risk. But that's a long-term strategy that takes time to, you just can't pivot and make that change overnight.
That's for sure. All right, well, let's take a few calls. I only have my guest today, Jim Ennis, for a few more minutes. If you want to get in, you can join us at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'm going to go to the phones in just a quick second. I just had a thought. I saw a piece the other day. I was reading about the Amish who grow everything very naturally. I'm low chemical use, I would think, within the Amish community. The rate of cancer among that community is unbelievably low. And I just wonder, you know, if, you know, more, I don't say more natural means of farming might lower the cancer rate, or if there's any connection to the type of chemicals we use. I know you're not a physician. Anything within your world that says, hey, this type of chemical use might be related to higher incidences of cancers?
Oh, yes. There are, you know, like I'm in Minnesota, and the University of Minnesota has had research showing that, you know, kind of the when spraying the fields in the spring, that sometimes that can impact, you know, the rate of cancer in certain areas where often those chemicals can get into the groundwater and impact, you know, women who are pregnant and have an effect on those infants. So there are correlations, but again, that research is still coming out. But that's not surprising to me.
Yeah, Deanne is listening in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Deanne, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a comment about the situation with water in California. My brother is a very large farmer in Northern California, and he has been denied water from the irrigation board, along with everybody in his district. So he has empty fields.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we're going to be seeing this come harvest time. There'll be nothing to harvest. I would like to point out two things. Water is being pumped out of reservoirs in California to flush rivers into the sea for the benefit of salmon. That's water that our farmers could be using. And I would also like to point out that no reservoir has been built in California since 1979, despite the increase in population. So this is really not a climate issue. This is a poor governance issue.
Hey, Dan, very well said. I could not agree with you more. A little bit later in the week, too, as I said, I'm going to take a look at the dropping water levels in our nation's reservoir and the water wars that we're seeing, especially on the West Coast and in our Midwest. And, Jim, you heard Deanne, her brother's a farmer in California. He can't plant his feed because he can't get water.
No, and I've driven up Interstate 5, and you'd see fields that are fallow, and there'll be signs, and, you know, again, blaming certain regulations that they can't afford to plant this crop here because they don't have access to water. So exactly to Diane's point. You know, the growing population in California over the last 40, 50 years, and then not seeing any, other mitigations for water, you know, whether it's reservoirs or other plans, is a real issue.
Hey, Diane, or Deanne, I'm sorry. What's your brother going to do this year then? If he can't plant his crop, what's he going to do? Sell his land, move to another state? What's he thinking?
He's struggling to make payments on his property, and he's dipping into his savings, but not everybody's in his position, and he's just praying for water for next year.
Well, we'll have to pray for him during the chaplet, which is coming up in about 40 minutes. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
And for sharing. What's his name, by the way? We'll put him on our prayer list here.
His name's Joseph.
All right, we got it. Thanks, Deanne. God bless you.
Thank you.
Boy, and we do need to pray for our farmers. We do need to pray for this country. I mean, there is drought. There are receding water levels, and we are seeing this avian flu that is striking. And let's talk about that for a minute. I don't know, Jim, if that's something you're intimately aware of, but we have a bird flu hitting our country, and it's one of the worst that we've seen in a very long time. We're, you know, as you heard the news report that we played just a few moments ago, the bird flu is apparently making a run through the nation's flocks. Is the large-scale kind of bird farming that we're doing really sustainable, and what kind of impact is this going to have on the food supply as well?
Well, it definitely, I think the avian flu now latest is 37 states have been impacted by the avian flu. And so it definitely is going to impact our food system. And, you know, again, the regulators are encouraging, you know, farmers to keep their birds indoors, and many of them also are indoors, primarily, you know, on a large scale. I think, again, this does kind of, I think, advocate for a diversified food system and continue to have a variety of strategies of how to raise poultry. And but this is what farmers have faced historically, are the just the challenges with nature. And this is one where, again, I think farmers are going to be resilient, but this is going to be a challenge for this season, this year, unfortunately.
I'm going to go back to the phones, grab a few more calls. 888-914-9149. Before I do that, though, to your point there, I'm just wondering, should there be a fundamental change to how we raise food in this country? I mean, so much of it depends on factory-like processes. That means huge numbers of low-wage jobs. People just don't seem to want those jobs anymore. This ties into the immigration issue that we're seeing within the country. You know, what is the model we currently have? And, you know, again, I'm not an expert in this area. Is the model sustainable? Is it working? Do we need some sort of reform in it?
Well, I think we need a lot more incentives for smaller scale farmers to be involved as well. And I think, again, whether this through a cooperative model to be able to afford, you know, purchasing seed and other inputs. But the key is to have a diversified approach for us, because, you know, when the pandemic hit, for instance, you know, we had to shut down a lot of these large meat processing facilities, and the smaller meat processing facilities were really busy. But a lot of the farmers who are dependent upon those large scale processors had to, you know, either cull their herds, or, you know, they suffered extreme losses. So I think we do have to have another approach in our agricultural system, and that means promoting a lot of family farms and continue to, and that's what Catholic Rural Life does.
Yeah, that's well said. And if people want to learn more about you too, I'll put a big plug in for you, CatholicRuralLife.org, right? CatholicRuralLife.org. They can find that out, and great resource. Fernando in California, you're on the air with Jim Ennis. Welcome.
Hello, how are you doing? Good to talk to you guys. I've always looked at it. I mean, the previous year, I recall that there was the snowpack was really high in California, and like one of your callers said, they're pumping out the water to the ocean, mm-hmm. and it always seems like it's a design plan to kind of bankrupt the farmers in the Central Valley for their land,
right?
And who knows what their intent. I mean, I don't know about the snowpack or the rain right. for the rivers over in Nevada and those areas. But I've also seen videos of, you know, they're destroying potatoes, and I just saw one today of avocados. Mm-hmm. So it seems like a coordinated plan to do something devious.
Yeah, well, thank you, Chrissy. Jim, I don't know whether you can speak to that or not, how familiar you are with what's going on. And what the future of farmers in California are too, because honestly, if I lived in that state and I was denied water and had some of these restrictions, I might move somewhere else where I can, you know, conduct my business and live a life.
Yeah, I was raised in California, and I love California, but they had a long 5-year drought, and so that really drained a lot of the aquifers. So once it was a big snowpack last year. And that helped, but it didn't replenish all of the aquifers, the groundwater. So that's what the farmers are relying on, is both groundwater and then the melting of the snowpacks. And so every year they need a healthy snowpack to be able to get through the summer and to be able to have affordable water. But when they don't have access to water, or the water districts restrict how much water is accessible, then farmers really are up a creek without a paddle. And it's really challenging.
All right. Do I have time, Maggie, for one more? Should I leave it here? Let me sneak one last call in for you, Jim. I'm up against a heartbreak here. Alicia in Fox Valley, Wisconsin. Good afternoon. Alicia, I apologize. I cannot make out your audio. I do apologize for that. It's very it's filled with a lot of artifacts. It's very garbled. So let me leave it at that point, because I do know I have to take a break. Jim, I want to thank you for being here. Before we go to that break, CatholicRurallife.org. What will people find there? How can they get connected?
Well, they'll find our organization promotes Catholic life in rural America. We need more families living out in rural areas. We need more young farmers. So you'll learn all about our different programming for evangelization and discipleship in rural communities.
Hey, there was a call that I didn't get a chance to get on. Interesting call from Martinez, California. Marissa was asking, how much of the water, and you may not be aware of this, is being funneled for the marijuana crops? That's a pretty big industry out there.
That's a very big industry. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but yes, they do require a lot of water.
Sounds good. Hey, Jim, thank you for making time for me today. Really interesting. We'll continue to monitor the food shortages and the avian flu and everything else that may affect food in this country and for around the world, because I know we help a lot of other nations as well. Have a great day. Keep up your important work, okay?
Thank you, Drew. And pray for the farmers in the Ukraine, too. They're really having a difficult time as well. So in your prayer, to remember them as well. Thank you.
They're not even going to be – I can't see any crops coming out of that country this year, do
right.
you? Or will we?
In parts, but in a major part, no.
All right. We have great intention. Jim, thanks. That's Jim Ennis. Check him out at Catholic Rural Life. When I return, U.S. gasoline prices have hit a record, and peak driving season is right around the corner. We'll be joined by Chris Temple. The president also came out and addressed the country. He's got some answers for why we are seeing record inflation, and he's got a strategy to tame it. We'll let you know what the president think is the answer. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
My compliments to Maggie, my producer. What a great bumper for this segment. A little ABBA, right? Money, money, money. It's good to be with you. Let's talk some money, money, money. Right? First of all, let me say thank you for the overwhelming success we had in our pledge drive. It's in large part to generosity from you. This hour was a phenomenal hour. Our goal was $3 million. We crossed that. Last number I saw was yesterday. We went about $180,000 over, somewhere in that ballpark, somewhere in that range. But almost 16,000 people joined us in this effort to keep this type of programming on the air. And I'm just so grateful for your generosity and for your charity. And if you missed your chance to support, of course, you know we're nonprofit, listener supported. And you could always make a pledge. You could do it online at Relevant. You could go to the mobile app, or you can call 877-291-0123. Thought I'd throw that out. Maybe you were on vacation. Maybe you were away. I don't know. Hey, we just got done talking about food shortages, the perfect storm, avian flu, fertilizer crisis, rising fuel costs. Well, news came out today, and this is not good news, but I want to get you up to speed on it. Gas has hit an all-time high. Gas prices have hit an all-time high. Regular unleaded nationwide, I don't know where you're living right now, is at $4.37 a gallon. The state I'm in is much higher than that. So I'm on the top end of that, right? Diesel is at $5.55 a gallon, which means that trucking companies are paying an awful lot more for their gas, and that cost is being now handed on to you. I saw a trucker this morning on the air, and they were talking about fuel costs. They say trucks get, I guess, about 5 gallons a mile or something like that, or 5 miles to the gallon of whatever, and they're using diesel. So it comes down to about a dollar a gallon at least. That number's going to go up, or down to a dollar a mile. So that cost is going to go up, and why should you care? Because your food costs are going to go up. The stuff you have shipping to you is going to go up. The cost gets passed on. I mean, Amazon has added an additional cost now. I saw this story a week or two ago. I think it happened in the end of April, due to the rising cost of getting product to your front door, and that's how they make their money. But it showed up everywhere. Last month's inflation rate, just to give you a little bit of perspective here, it was just under 5%. It was 4.9%, which comes after a lot of months of similar increases. The biggest places where we're seeing that inflation is the ones that we use the most of, right? Food and gas. Probably the two biggest expenditures that we regularly make outside of your housing expense. So, and I know people are feeling the pinch, and they're trying whatever ways they can to beat that. In fact, there was a survey that I saw. It showed that a majority of drivers are changing their habits to try to increase their gas mileage. That means, you know, not accelerating as hard, braking, keeping the speed down. I work with a couple people here at the network who did an analysis on tolls versus, you know, a way that has no tolls, right? Which way is ultimately cheaper with tolls factored in or the braking and stopping and starting, you know, the longer time in the car. So people are really trying to save money. People are changing their food brands. They're not just buying whatever they want to buy anymore. They're making tough decisions or putting certain products back. And, of course, this is hitting the ruling party where it counts, at the ballot box. Polls right now, if this continues, there will be a bloodletting. There will be a bloodbath. There will be an exodus from the party in power. Inflation right now has become the number one concern for voters across the country. Number one, it's not the life issue. It's not the war in Ukraine. It's none of the other things. It is inflation. Even suburban women, even though many Democrats are trying to make this abortion controversy a much bigger issue, they're trying to make that the go to the poll and vote for Joe Biden or for all your congressmen and senators type of mantra for him. Now, President Joe Biden is feeling the heat. He held a news conference today about how he's trying to reduce inflation. And let me just share with you very quickly. Chris Temple is going to be stopping by. We'll get his expertise on this. I'll share with you the two reasons that Joe Biden put forward for inflation. You might agree. You might say that's a bunch of. Here's the president at his presser today addressing the rising cost of inflation.
But first, I want us to be crystal clear about the problem. There are two leading causes of inflation we're seeing today. The first cause of inflation is a once-in-a-century pandemic. Not only did it shut down our global economy, it threw the supply chains and demand completely out of whack, especially in countries where more effective recoveries weren't available, especially in those sectors that rely on semiconductors. These supply challenges have been further hampered by the onset of Delta and Omicron viruses. And you've all seen it, you've all felt it. And this year we have a second cause, Mr. Putin's war in Ukraine. We saw in March that 60% of inflation that month was due to price increases at the pump for gasoline. Putin's war has raised food prices as well, because Ukraine and Russia, two of the world's major breadbaskets for wheat and corn, are essentially completely stalled.
Yeah, so how true is that? Sounds credible, right? I'm joined right now by Chris Temple, editor and publisher of the National Investor. Check him out at nationalinvestor.com, nationalinvestor.com. He joins us today to take a look at these latest numbers and where we're heading. Chris, thanks for joining me as always. I always enjoy our time together. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
So you heard the president.
An answer to your question. Look, there's a grain of truth to both of those things, but they are numbers two and three, respectively, way down the list of the causes of inflation. The biggest cause of inflation was the man that the president reappointed to a second term as chairman of the Federal Reserve, and asked Jerome Powell. So people need to keep that in the back of their mind. Nobody ever likes to admit that, and Biden's not the first who tries to skirt that. But we had a Fed that ran one of the most reckless policies in history for the last 2 years, and now we're paying for that.
In fact, the president addressed that. He talked about what the solution is, and he talked about the Fed. Here's the president earlier today, Chris. Listen to this, and I'd love your analysis.
And those two major contributors to inflation are both global in nature. That's why we're seeing historic inflation in countries all over the world. But here's the good news. Because of the actions we've taken, America's in the stronger position to meet this challenge than just about any other country in the world. Some of the roots of the inflation are outside of our control, to state the obvious. But there are things we can do and we can address and we need to do. That starts with the Federal Reserve, which plays a primary role in fighting inflation in our country. I put forward a highly qualified nominees to lead that institution, and I strongly urge the Senate to confirm them without delay.
All right, give me your assessment of that. We know the Fed's going to continue to raise the rate. He put some names forward. What do you make of them and the president's approach to this?
Well, look, that's all politicking, but I will say this, that yes, I'm sure that before the president reappointed Powell, he said, look, whatever got us to this point, I'm in trouble if you don't get this inflation back under control. So that's one of the reasons why Jerome Powell has gone from one of the great arsonists of all time to now a fireman. Yep. Now, recently, when he raised interest rates for the second time, he graduated from a squirt pistol to a super soaker, but he's still trying to put out a five-alarm fire with all that. This month, as you and I are talking, Drew, they are still net adding bonds to their balance sheet statement. Wow. Until allegedly the 1st of June, they start to trim some of that. Well over $9 trillion, where the Fed has monetized this sugar high that we've been on for the last couple of years in the markets and in the economy. Yeah. So, look, the president probably half believes what he says, that the Fed is going to try and get this under control. Powell has made very clear they're going to raise interest rates for the foreseeable future, try and tighten financial market conditions. And I will warn people out there, and I've been saying this for a while, that unlike what we all got used to in the markets in the recent past, where the Fed would blink and flinch and get scared the first time the markets threw a hissy fit, they're not going to do it anytime soon. Because right now it's a bigger political imperative for them to try and get inflation back in the proverbial toothpaste tube a little bit. The question is, and I think you and I talked about this last time, do they blow up the markets by pushing the dollar too high and interest rates too high as they do this? That remains to be seen.
And my guest today, Chris Temple, if you want to join us, we'll take a few of your calls as well. The number here, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'll be honest with you, because I'm scared to death as to what they're going to do. Every monetary policy that we have seen, the trillions of dollars worth of spending, it has sent this country right now into a spiral. And the president came out, he's saying he's doing, what he's doing right now is to help relieve inflation. And yet we're seeing, huge increases in spending. There's been, I haven't seen any reduction in inflation at all since he took office. In fact, I've just seen everything get worse. And he claims, okay, it's supply chain issues. Okay, it's the Republicans in Congress that are making prices go higher. He said he's working on getting more truckers hired. He's going to tax billionaires so they pay their fair share, and corporations have to pay their fair share of taxes. He wasn't clear how he's going to bring about those changes. But we'll see what happens. In fact, I'd love your take on his view of Republicans, and this is not a partisan show, but of being to blame. During his presser, he made these comments about Dems versus Republicans and their plans. Listen to this.
The first is my plan, the Democratic plan. Plan put forward by congressional Republicans is a second alternative. Here's how each of us would tackle inflation. My plan is to lower everyday costs for hardworking Americans, and lower the deficit by asking large corporations and the wealthiest Americans to not engage in price gouging and to pay their fair share in taxes. The Republican plan is to increase taxes on the middle-class families, let billionaires and large companies off the hook as they raise prices and reap profits at record amounts. And it's really that simple.
All right, so your thoughts on that. Back to my point. I mean, I've seen nothing but inflation and higher costs and unbelievable spending right now with this particular plan. Does anybody have a plan?
I question that, Drew. I really do. But we do, you know, the president just threw a bunch of words out there today that sounds like he's running for re-election or trying to help the Democrats in the fall, which is probably hoping against hope, as you pointed out. But let me tell you what he is doing that shows just how disingenuous or just out of touch that he really is. He's talked about energy. One of the comments he made today in that little speech of his is suggesting that there's 9,000 leases that oil and gas companies have that they aren't using, and so he's going to start to penalize them. And he's alternately charged the energy industry with price gouging, with not producing enough, and so forth. Only a couple hours earlier, his Treasury Secretary, who has her job primarily because of her green credentials, not anything to do with money and finance, but because of her green credentials. She was in front of the Senate, and to his credit, Senator Toomey from Pennsylvania just destroyed her, made her out to look like the half nitwit and half dissembling Treasury Secretary that she is, because she is the one who has led the charge. And before she even got to this present job, Drew, of making it fashionable to penalize energy companies and penalize Wall Street and investment banks to put money in them. She was specifically asked this morning about her cockamamie idea for this rating system for finance and what risks does finance have because of all of these green issues. And Toomey asked her, name me one bank in the last 50 years that went out of business because of anything you're talking about. And of course, she couldn't. Right. So you've got an administration that on one side of its mouth to try and act like it cares about inflation or wants to do something that browbeats the energy industry, but yet as a matter of policy, it prohibits the kind of ramp up in development that we need. And of course, that's one thing, not to mention the fact that the Americans' heating and cooling bills are going to triple. By the time, you know, we get to the end of this year and next winter, because we're sending all of our cheap gas overseas.
Yeah, Chris, I got to hold it right there. Stay with me. When we come back, we'll grab a couple calls. Sure. I have a few minutes left with Chris Temple, taking a look at the latest news coming from the White House, addressing the rising costs of inflation and how it is impacting you. We'll take your calls and questions and continue this conversation when I return.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Look, I know you got to be frustrated. I know. I can taste it. Frustrated by high prices, by gridlock in Congress, by the time it takes to get anything done. Believe me, I understand the frustration. But the fact is, congressional Republicans, not all of them, but the mega Republicans are counting on you to be as frustrated by the pace of progress, which they've done everything they can to slow down, that will hand power over to them and enact so they can enact their extreme agenda. Look at their agenda. We'll put up on a webpage somewhere, I think I can do this, the Scott Plan. It's in writing. We need a government focused on what families actually need. So I urge all Americans to think about the path I've laid forward.
Yeah, I'll tell you, a little bit creepy. At the same time, I would agree, we need a plan that's going to help families. We certainly do that. Right now, the Democrats are in power. Republicans aren't. And the president can blame another party. To me, that's frustrating. Let's take ownership for the problem. Let's talk about how we got here. Let's get out of this mindset of constantly spending money and big government. It's only going to lead to greater suffering for our people. If you're just joining us, speaking today with the editor and publisher of the National Investor. And you can check that website out at nationalinvestor.com. Chris Temple is here for us. I mean, a lot of stone throwing. It is politics. You know, let's blame the other party for the problems that we have here. We do need a plan that's going to help families. Give me your assessment of what you see coming in the not too distant future. The president, last time I heard him speak, said, oh, yeah, we're probably going to see a recession in 2023. Now that's been dialed back. I couldn't believe he'd say that. There's not going to be a recession. What do you see coming based on where we are right now? And I don't know, you know, how these policies are going to change until there's a changing of the guard. But I'll leave that with you, Chris, and let you unpack that.
Well, Drew, either a changing the guard or, unfortunately, a crisis of some kind that forces everybody's hands to act. You know, I mentioned it a few minutes ago that the Fed, with raising interest rates to try and fight the inflation that it is responsible for primarily, stands a very real risk of causing an implosion in global financial markets. We're not there yet. There's still incredible liquidity, especially in U.S. markets. But look, at the same time, the second largest economy on the planet, China, has been aggressively easing monetary policy, cutting interest rates, reducing bank requirements for months, because they're in a far bigger mess than we are, and in a far bigger mess, I think, than the world really knows. So the Fed and all the policymakers have to be delicate. I'll tell you what I would love to see, and we're not going to see it, at least in my opinion, until there is a Republican House and Senate that drags Biden back to the center and takes him back out of the clutches of the far left. There needs to be a Marshall Plan yesterday to figure out our nation's future energy needs. Because if we do this right, there is an opportunity to have a much better living standard, reduce carbon emissions, have the green economy, the cleaner, the more sustainable economy that these people want. But you don't do it by wishing. You don't do it by putting the fossil fuel industry out of business before you even take the first step to have the replacement ready and operational. So I hope we do that, because the point is going to come where we are forced to do that. You know, we're really smug thinking we're to continue to compel the rest of the world to give us anything we want when we want it. We may not get that anymore. Part of what's happened in just recent months, thanks to our global intrigues and the rest of this, we have just galvanized half or slightly more than half of the world's population, India, Russia, and China. We drove Russia out of Europe, never let them back in to begin with 30 years ago like we should have.
Right, I agree.
And so now you're looking at a situation where this block of countries will see to itself. The time will come when China says, well, we're not going to sell our stuff to you at any price. India wants it. They're closer. They're a good neighbor. They're a more reliable ally. We're in trouble if we don't get these things organized ourselves. So we need to relearn what was called the Monroe Doctrine once upon a time and look at it today in every respect, including for our future energy and strategic metal security. We're going to do it the easy way or the hard way, and I don't know which it's going to be yet.
So well said. Father David is listening in Lexington, Kentucky. It's good to have him joining the conversation. Father, thanks for dialing in. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that I think a lot of times, especially in politics, we end up pointing to kind of inert forces as being responsible parties. So, for instance, the clip you played last segment talking about the war in Ukraine and the pandemic, the global pandemic, as being driving causes of inflation. Though, like, the virus itself doesn't cause inflation. The virus itself didn't actually cause supply chain issues. There was the decisions that were made by people, by politicians, by individuals around those things that actually drive prices higher, drive supply chain issues.
That's right.
Drive global shortages. And I think as long as we actually permit people who have asked us to entrust them with responsibility, in governance, in directing the course of events, as long as we allow them to kind of point at things that are totally outside of anyone's control, there's no actual reason to have them in any sort of leadership position, right? If no one can change the course of those events, then why are they even there? And so I think we really need to be pretty conscious about saying, how can the decisions we make actually shape things for the better? And how have the decisions we've made in the past not turned out the way they should? And how can we learn from those situations?
Hey, Father, that was really well said. I'm grateful for your call. Thank you so much for adding that. I only have a minute left. So, Chris, I'm going to let you have the final word here, too. love the father said.
Well, he's if father's absolutely right, you know, whether it's today, in part Biden blaming Vladimir Putin for inflation, or you can go back a generation when it was really getting cranked up in the 70s to the infamous time when Herbert Stein, who was the Nixon and Ford chief economist, said inflation was the fault of American housewives for not being wise enough and savvy enough shoppers. Wow. I mean, both are idiotic, and both of them avoid the central question to all of this, and that is the nature of money and credit, which is why, as you know, Drew, I harp so much on Catholic social teaching and historically the church's, well, once upon a time, unfortunately no longer existing, condemnation of usury. Yep. We have to have a system for the people, not for the powerful.
Well, Chris, I got to leave it right there. Father, thank you. Chris, thank you. If people want to get connected to you, they can read, I know, your report. Best way to do that, what would you recommend?
Just go to nationalinvestor.com, and for the time being, if you sign up for my free mailing list that's right on the website, you'll get my whole long issue on every aspect of energy and infrastructure, from policy to investment ideas.
Chris, I'm grateful. Thank you for joining us and, of course, for your insight. We're about to pray. I'll remember your intentions along with mine, okay? We'll catch up soon. That's Chris Temple, and we will pray the chaplet when I return. Stay with me.